Hey everyone, Jason here. Mike and I really have loved the response we have been getting with our Get Schooled series featuring coaches from Northeast Ohio as well as coaches across the country. We are looking forward to continuing this series next week with two new episodes featuring Brad Stamps from Arkansas and Phil Schmuck from Twinsburg. We will also be dropping an NBA Summer Free Agency podcast wrap-up next week. If you want to keep up to date with the latest news and information from our podcast, please follow us on Twitter at HoopHeadsPod. We have a lot more in store in the coming weeks, including some really awesome guests. Mike and I had a great time taping this episode in which we talk about how players, coaches, and parents should handle a player getting benched. We hope you enjoyed this new episode of the Hoop Heads Pod.
The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And today, Jason, we're going to be discussing a somewhat sensitive subject. What happens when your child gets sent to the bench? And we're going to look at this particular question from three different perspectives. We're going to look at it from the perspective of parents, from the perspective of the player that it's happened to, and also from the perspective of a coach. So we all know it's a difficult situation when a child isn't getting an opportunity to play. Everybody who plays a sport wants to get out there on the court. So it makes it difficult when you have a situation where you're not playing as much as you want to. And parents sometimes have a difficult time handling that. Players, we know, certainly have a difficult time handling it. And coaches, it's always a challenge to figure out what's the best way to deal with kids who aren't getting the playing time that maybe they feel they deserve. So we're going to jump into first from the perspective of a parent and what they should do in terms of handling that. And for me, I'll start out with the first point. For me, I think one of the things that is most important for parents to understand is that they are not often the most objective person when it comes to evaluating their own child's talent and abilities. And I see this all the time. I see it as a parent talking with other parents. I see it from a coaching perspective. I've had people tell me lots of different things about how good their kids are, how good somebody else's kid is. And you see that often what is reality and what is the effect of what the parent's opinion is, there's often a disconnect there. And I think that can lead to trouble.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I can specifically think of kids on my team that have come up to me and been like, well, my parents says that I should be playing more, or my parents says this, and my parents says that. And my usual response to them was, well, your parents aren't the coach of this team. If they want to come talk to me about your playing time, I'm open to discuss why or why not. Why not? So I think it's really important to as a parent to understand that they are not the coach of the team. You know, and we see parents all the time yelling things from the stands. We've talked about this on previous podcasts of telling the kids what to do, and the kids are stuck having a real hard time knowing, what should I do? Should I do what my coach is telling me, or should I do what my parent is telling me? So I think it's really important as a parent that no matter what, you try to be as positive with your kid as much as you can, and you try to be as supportive of the kid in whatever role that they might have on the floor. So I think it's really, really important as a parent to kind of separate yourselves, the emotional piece that you talked about. It definitely is, you know, really hard for parents because that's their baby. That's their kid. And I get it. I have kids and I know you understand it because you have kids. But I think it's really important to separate yourself from it because you want your kid to succeed, but you also want them to learn. If being benched is something that's going to teach them a valuable lesson, which sometimes I can talk about personal experience where I've benched a kid because I wanted to teach him a lesson. That just a simple putting them on the bench for one or two games, it might end up being that they're going to start again. So I think it's really important to understand that there's a reason for it and the coach isn't just doing it because to do it.
Right. I mean, coaches, let's face it, all coaches want to win. So they're going to put the players that they feel give their team the best opportunity to win out on the floor. That doesn't mean that coaches never make mistakes, that they don't sometimes play one player over another and it's not an error. But for the most part, coaches are making decisions and playing players based on the idea of, I want to win games. And if they want to win games, they're going to put the best players out on the floor. And sometimes parents just have a really hard time recognizing the flaws in their child's game or how their child's talent stacks up with the talent of another child. And, you know, when they do get out on the court and their kid makes a mistake, you'll sit next to them. Oh, he just, you know, he wasn't warmed up, or that, you know, the coach didn't put him in the right spot to make a play. And if they would just let him shoot from here instead of over there, he'd be so much better. And so if you're a parent, one of the things that you really want to make sure that you do is that you're not making excuses for your child, that you're believing and understanding what it is that your child's capable of doing. And when you don't, when you have that disconnect, it can be a very difficult situation for you and the conversations you have with your child. And subsequently, if you have a conversation with the coach is going to be in a much better position to have a realistic view of what your child's abilities are.
Yeah, I can speak to something that happened on my team this previous year. I coached the in Olmsted Falls, we have an A. We call it the A and the B team, but how we split them up is a little different than that. But anyways, we had a girl that got put on my team, and I coached the B team, the non-conference team. And at the parent meeting, the parent came up to me and asked, well, you know, we're very supportive of this child. You know, we just want to know why she made the B team instead of the A team. And I looked at it very positively. Like, she came to me because she wanted – instead of – saying, oh, you should have been playing on this team. But she came and talked to me, and we had a pretty good open dialogue, and throughout the season we had a very good dialogue. So I looked at that was the perfect way to handle the situation, and I think that it's really important for them to for parents to take it as positive as they can, because what she did was she said, what are the reasons that my child made the team? Well, then what did she want to focus on all season? Was that the few things that we pointed out to her? And she did get better as she progressed. Now, what will that look like, translate to when she's in eighth grade this year and playing? You know, who knows? Maybe she will make the A team, because she was a fringe player. She was on the cusp. So I think it's really, really important to, as a parent, you know, look at things objectively, like you just said, but also take as much you can as you can from the coach and see, how can I improve my child's game? And I really respected that, as opposed to the previous year when I had a parent say, oh, I can't believe my child's on the non-conference team, blah, 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 blah. She should be on the conference team. She shouldn't be on the conference team. But anyways, I took it much more positively, and it was a much more easy interaction throughout the season, and the rapport that we had throughout the season was really, really good.
Yeah, and I think when parents approach it that way, where you have a positive attitude going into a meeting instead of being accusatory, instead of going in all angry. You know, one of the things that I think sometimes happens is you're at a game, your kid maybe has been playing, suddenly in one particular game doesn't play or doesn't play as much as they've had in the past, and now the parent's sitting in the stands, and throughout the game they're just getting angrier and angrier and angrier, and then the game ends and mom or dad want to come down out of
all
the bleachers.
Face.
Right. They want to come sprinting down out of the bleachers when they're all worked up emotionally and talk to the coach. And I can tell you from experience, more on the coaching side, that just doesn't work. There's never a productive conversation that happens in the emotional moments after a game. The coach doesn't want to, is not in a state to be able to discuss it rationally, and certainly the parent isn't. There's a quote that it's attributed to the Celtics coach Brad Stevens that basically says, if you want to talk about playing time, my door is always open, but if you come in to talk, be prepared to hear the truth. And I think a lot of times people want to come in and have conversations, whether it's parents or whether it's players, and when the coach says, here's the reasons why you're not playing, then what happens? People get defensive. They deny. They make excuses. They say, that's not really how it is. I'm not really like that. That, you know, I'm better than, you know, I have more skill, whatever the case may be. And I think you have to be prepared in any kind of conversation like this when your child isn't playing as much as you want him to play. If you're going to have a conversation with the coach and you're going to question why your child isn't playing, you have to be prepared that if the coach is a good coach, that person is going to tell you the truth about your child and where they stand. And I think that's something that, again, going back to previous discussions we've had, that being honest on both sides of that conversation, the parent being honest with the coach being honest to the parent, is going to produce what hopefully can be a productive situation where the parent and the player learn, hey, here's what we need you to do. And that's how you can earn more minutes. And when you do that in a non-emotional state, you're much more likely to get better results.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. And I think the opposite side of that coin is the worst thing that a parent can do is to be sitting in the stands complaining to other parents. Because I think they don't really think when they're doing it. And the problem that they have is if they're complaining to a parent, they're complaining to someone else who has a child on the team who's possibly that child might be trying to take minutes from child. And I think that causes friction. And you know, I had another incident, it was either two or three seasons ago, where I had a parent come up to me after the game one time saying, "Oh, you're doing a really good job with this, with the roster that you have, because you know they're not that good." And there were two other parents standing right behind them, and they heard it. And this parent, I kind of just tuned out at times throughout the season. And the other two parents came up to me, and they were like, "That person's so mean. Why are they saying that things about our children?" And I just said, "Oh, I just ignore it." And I was like, "I've had to deal with it, and it just is what it is." So I think it's really important that as a parent, you kind of understand that there are parents of the children on the team that your child is playing on listening at all times, and whatever you say could come back to haunt you.
Right, or you'll see in the stands, you'll see a split between the parents of the kids who are playing sitting in one area and the parents of the kids who are bench players or not playing as much sitting in another area, and then the parents of the bench players say, "I can't believe Susie's playing ahead of my Mary, you know, and she's so much better," and this, and that's, it's bad enough when you're doing that in the stands. One of the things that is the worst thing that you can do as a parent is to talk bad about other kids on the team in front of your own child. Like, how can the coach be playing so-and-so over you? And, you know, you're so much better than them. And then again, that just breaks down the team chemistry and the camaraderie and everything that, you know, you work to build as a coach and build your culture and build teamwork and try to get kids to be great teammates. It's just really, really hard when the parent is bad-mouthing a player. Or, again, as a parent, you should never, in front of your child, bad-mouth your child's coach. Now, that doesn't mean that every coach is perfect. That doesn't mean that you can't talk to your spouse about, "Oh, this coach should be doing something different." But if you are saying negative things about your coach or your child's coach in front of your child, all you're doing is eroding that respect that the child has for the coach, and you're just setting it up where you're building in excuses for the child. And now the child says, "Well, it's not my fault that I'm not playing. My coach is an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing, or she doesn't know what she's doing." And what we really want to focus on is what can I, as the player, do to help me to increase my role? And if parents are busy bad-mouthing other players, bad-mouthing their coach, the child's going to develop an attitude that, "Look, it's not my fault. Things that are out of my control are what's limiting my playing time." And we want to put control back in the hands of the kids, because ultimately that's where the control lies. If I improve as a player and I get better and I practice and I do the things my coach has asked me to do, then I can get a different outcome. If all I do is blame and complain, I'm not really going to improve and get better.
Yeah, I will say I have the luxury of since I do have the luxury of coaching the non-conference team, you know, we have a policy that the first three quarters we try to play kids even minutes as much as we can. Obviously, there are situations like foul trouble or things that might come into play, but for the most part, my kids get to play even minutes. And you know, this goes back to our communication that we have. You know, we tell the parents at the parent meeting, you know, kids are going to play as equal minutes as we can the first three quarters of the game. You know, I split it up. I had 12 players on my team last year, so it's really hard sometimes to get.
It's very hard to play 12. It's hard to play 12 players in a game for sure.
So you know, we have this conversation that everyone's going to get to play. I'm going to play everyone as equal as I can. And then going into the fourth quarter, you know, we're going to, you know, try to win the game. And we explain to the parents as well, and I think this goes back to the communication piece that, you know, we only have 24 minutes of a game, but when we have practices for an hour and a half every single day that we don't have a game, they're getting way more out of the practices than they are out of the games. And I know some parents really don't understand that. They don't seem to comprehend that, you know, practice is really where the kids at this age are really making their hay. The games, you know, it is beneficial to get out there and compete for sure.
Right.
But I think that a lot of these kids that are in middle school, they're getting way more out of practices if practices are run properly. And that's something that we can talk about at a future podcast about how to properly run practices. But I think that it's really important that parents understand that, because a lot of times they don't see the results that are happening on the practice floor because they're only seeing the games.
Absolutely. We're going to talk to Coach Greg White, who he's a coach at in Bentonville, Arkansas. We're going to talk to him later this week. And I actually got a chance to hear him speak at a USA basketball clinic this past weekend. And he had a very interesting way of approaching dealing with parents who come to him with complaints about playing time. He said, if a parent comes in and wants to talk to me about playing time, before I'll have that conversation with them, he requires the parent to come in and watch three consecutive practices. He says, you come in and watch three practices. After those three practices, we'll sit down and we'll discuss your child's playing time and why, what you observed in practice and what we've observed as a coaching staff. Then we'll be willing to have that conversation. So it puts the onus back on the parent to make
show
a commitment,
right?
To make a commitment and show up. If it's this important to you, then you need to make a commitment to show up and watch your child practice. Because again, we're spending, if you're a high school coach, you're spending a lot more time with your players on the practice floor than you are in the games and competitions. And so we make decisions as coaches based off of production and what we see in practice, and then obviously ultimately in the games. But practice is where it all starts. And if a kid is performing to a high level in practice, going back to what I said earlier, the kid's going to play. Coaches want to win. They're going to play the kids that are going to help them win. And so if a kid's not playing as much as their parent might think they deserve, chances are that kid's not getting it done on the practice floor. Because if they were, the coach would put them out on the floor. And I think it's important to remember, just to kind of wrap up maybe this particular section about parenting and not getting the playing time for your child that you might want, is that we're trying to use the game to teach life lessons. And when you as the parent make excuses for your child, when you as the parent put the blame on another coach or another player or teammates or anyone else besides your child, you're making a mistake. What you want to try to do is show your child, look, here's what you need to do to get better. If you get better, if you improve, you're going to have an opportunity to get out on the floor. You have to sometimes fight through adversity. Sometimes it may be that it's not fair. Maybe you have that coach who's honestly made a legitimate mistake, and maybe your child should be playing. But we've all been in situations throughout our life, and adults, life's not fair. Sometimes you don't get the opportunity that maybe you really do deserve, and that opportunity goes to someone else. So then what are we teaching? Are we just putting the blame and complaining and giving up? Or we want to teach our kids that, hey, this is a situation that is somewhat adverse and I got to fight through it? Or do we just give up? And I think it's very important to teach a life lesson of, look, things aren't working out the way you want to right now, but you got to stick with it. You got to work hard. You got to put your energy and effort into being the best player you can be at the role that the coach has assigned to you, and keep working to try to, you know, to try to expand your role based on whether you have a conversation with the coach or whether the player just is deciding, hey, this is what I need to do to get better. If you can teach your kid that hard work and perseverance and fighting through that adversity is the way to go, then you've really gotten something out of a situation where your kid's not playing as much as you'd like them to.
It's all about mindset, really. Everything you just said, it's all about trying to cultivate a positive mindset in your child, and I think that's really the most important thing a parent can do. You know, make them understand that they need to learn from whatever situation they're thrown into.
For sure. I've been listening to the Focus 3 podcast, and their whole philosophy, and you know, who knows, maybe at some point we'll get one of the guys from that podcast to come on and talk to us. But their whole thing is that you have an external event that happens. So in this case, that external event is you're not playing as much as you'd like to, which is something that you don't control. The coach controls your playing time. Whether you like it or not, the coach decides whether you go in the game or you don't go in the game. So that event happens to you, and then you have a reaction. So is your reaction that you whine, you pout, you complain, or you're the parent and you're just sitting in the stands arguing, whatever? Or do you teach your child that, here's an opportunity for you to work harder, bring more energy, bring more enthusiasm, really accept your role and try to be the best teammate you can. And then at the end, you get an outcome based on the decisions that you made, the action that you took. And so I think what we're trying to teach here is you want to put the control back with your child. You don't want to have the external things that they can't control the coach. They can't control how good the player is in front of them. They have no control over that. The only thing they can control is their level of skill and energy and enthusiasm and all that stuff. And if you give them that control, at least they can do something about that. They can't do anything about the coach. They can't do anything about the other players. They can't do anything about their opponent, but they can control themselves. And when they do, they feel better about it. And even though they may not be playing as much as they'd like, when they feel that they can control how hard they work and their energy and their enthusiasm, I think it just makes for a better situation overall for everybody.
I agree.
All right, let's move on to if you're the player. Now, we've kind of already touched on this a little bit in terms of how a player should approach it, but I think the most important thing to remember is you don't want to become the bad teammate. You don't want to become the whiner, the complainer, the kid who's pouting, the kid who gives less effort. If you're doing that, you're not impressing your coach. It's not like the coach is going to say, wow, Jason, there you are over in the corner and we're doing a drill and instead of giving your best, you're pouting, you're grumbling, you're going through half speed. There's no coach anywhere in any sport that observes a kid doing that and is like, whoa, I made a mistake.
Let's start them.
Yeah, that Jason, boy, he's doing a great job of pouting over there. Let's get him into the game. Let's get him some more minutes. It doesn't happen. So again, going back to what I said a few minutes ago, you have to think about what are the actions that you're taking? What is the outcome that you want? And think about, are your actions leading to the outcome that you're trying to get? And I can guarantee if you're trying to get more playing time, whining, pouting, complaining, giving less effort, bringing less enthusiasm is not going to get you what you want.
I'll tell you what it would get on my team. I have the stern talking to you. Basically, 2 years ago, I had a girl who was doing this, and I told her, like, do you want, like, if you're going to continue to do that, you might as well not come to practice anymore. Because it's just bringing practice down. It's distracting everyone, you know, and the whole thing with middle school dynamics and cliques and girls wanting to, like, the friends of that girl weren't having fun because they had to, quote unquote, console her and make her feel better. And, oh, it was just so much drama. And I'm sitting here like, if you're going to do this, then don't come to practice.
Right.
It's like you need to be accepting of your current position. Yes, I know you want to start. Show me that you're capable of starting. Show me that you have the ability to start and learn from mistakes. Don't stand in the corner and, like you said, pout. That's not impressive to me. That's not showing me what you can do. You need to display that you can do it, and then you'll get back in the starting position. So I think it's really important what you said, you know, that they just do – if you're negative and you're pouting – you're just bringing the whole team down. It's not, you're not a good teammate. That's being a terrible teammate. And if you're friends with the girl on the team, it's being a terrible friend, ultimately. And I think, you know, you're affecting your ability to learn and get better, but you're also affecting the kids on the team around you. So I think it's really important that if you are quote unquote benched, that you A, have an open dialogue with the coach, discuss why you got benched. Don't just be like, well, I don't know why, and walk away from it.
Right. That's really hard. That's really hard sometimes for a kid to do, especially the younger you go, the more difficult that is as a player to go in and have that conversation with your coach. And again, as we'll talk about from this question from a coaching perspective here in a couple minutes, but as a coach, you have to be able to have those lines of communication that we've talked about have to be open. You have to be able to have an honest conversation with kids about here's why you're playing, here's why you're not playing. And I know you've talked about talking to your players kind of throughout the preseason and the season about here's where we're at, here's where you're at, here's where I see you fitting into our team, here's your role. And I think that's something that good coaches do, is they are constantly having those kinds of conversations and checking in with their players. Because if you're a player and you're not starting or you're not seeing as many minutes as you feel like you deserve, if the coach is treating you as a second-class citizen because you're not a starter or you're not one of the stars of the team. You're just setting up it's very difficult as a player to then want to give your best effort. Coaches have to really do a great job of trying to encourage and be supportive of every player from player one all the way down to player 12. I think it's critical.
I think and the perfect example, and I know I used it in a previous podcast before, but was like Manu Ginobili for the Spurs came over and expected he was going to be a starter. I'm pretty sure, you know, he came from Argentina and I think he did start as a starter. Played what, 16 years or whatever.
Right.
And then eventually got to the point where Popovich said, you would be a much better player coming off the bench for us. Like, and that was his role. And I think ultimately, obviously in my mind at least, I'm going to always go back and remember Manu Ginobili being as like a great sixth man off the bench, like consistent. I'm not going to remember him as a starter or as the great, you know, the greatest player in the world, but I'm going to remember how he fit into the role. And he's probably, I mean, I'm going to expect he's a Hall of Fame player, right?
I would think so.
You know, he was very accepting of that role. So, yep, and he's an NBA player whose abilities are far past any of the kids that we're coaching. So we have to, the kids have to look at that as a positive way to go about looking at things like, oh, I can be an impactful player and not maybe start. So I think it's really another thing kids can do is just accept their role. But if they want to strive to get better and strive to get to that starting position, then that's fine. But some teams don't even play their best players to start games. They do save one of their best three or four for the second crew. You know, you look at another NBA example, Jamal Crawford. I think that most teams that he's been on, he's not the sixth best player on the team. But teams have used him and harnessed him in a he's off the bench, he's going to bring less energy, and you know he can score. So I think that just because you're the sixth man, you're coming off the bench first, doesn't mean that you're the sixth best player on the team. As long as the coach has had that conversation.
Right, you
got to
have a conversation, absolutely.
That I think you have to be able to accept your role.
Yeah, so to me, the bottom line, Jason, here is that if you are not earning enough playing time, if you are not playing as much as you feel that you should, there are two ways as a player that you can handle it. One, you can whine, you can pout, you can complain, you can blame the circumstances, the coach, your teammates, your mom, your dad, whoever. Or you can take it upon yourself to say, what can I do to make it very, very difficult for my coach not to play me? So I play even harder. I challenge the players who are in front of me in practice every day. I bring more energy. I bring more enthusiasm every day. And I try to be the best teammate, the best player, the hardest worker that I can possibly be. And again, if we tie this all back to the lessons that we're trying to teach through the game of basketball, which one of those two is going to serve you better in your life? Is it going to serve you better when things get tough that you're going to whine and pout and complain and give less effort? Or is it going to benefit you to fight through those difficult situations, work harder, work smarter, figure out a way to find a solution to your problem rather than just complain about it? Nobody's ever solved the problem by complaining about it. It just doesn't happen. So instead, we have to look for what can we do to change it up and to try to make our situation better. Now, does that mean that every time that's going to result in you getting more playing time? No, it doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. But going the other way leaves you with a zero chance of things changing. By working hard, you're much more likely to change your situation. So I think as players, that's the decision that you have to make. And if you want a better outcome, it's obviously clear which one of those two routes you should take without any question. Let's go into the last perspective here of this particular question, which is when you're the coach and a player is not playing as much as they would like to, how do you handle that situation? I think the key, we've already talked about the first stage of that, which is communication. And you should be in constant communication with your players about where they stand, where they are at this point in the season in terms of here's what your role is. And again, sometimes roles change during the season. Sometimes a kid gets better and improves and gets an opportunity in a game and starts playing better, and maybe someone else in front of them plays a little bit worse and things change. But the key is the coach has to be communicating with the players. And if there's that open dialogue, then it makes it much more likely that situations where a kid's not playing as much as they want to can be resolved in a positive way.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've kind of harped on the communication piece, but I think it's really important to reflect too with your kids about like how did you improve this week on something? You know, we've talked in the past how I have them set at individual and team goals, but are we progressing to those goals? Are we not progressing them? So I think it's really important for a player to understand that we are in their corner. You know, they're on our team. We picked them for a reason. I mean, like when we have the boys teams, we had like 58 kids try out last year. So we picked you for a reason. We didn't just say, oh, we only don't have enough people, so you're going to come join our team. So I think it's really important for them to understand that they are a valuable asset to the team if they go about things in the right way and accept their roles. So just looking at what have we done to improve ourselves, and I talk to my kids all the time, you know, this is something that I want you to work on today, or this is something that I want you to work on this week, or in this game, I want you to do this. And that can be individual and team. And if they take that and they understand that and they show it, then I'm going to be more likely to say, okay, well, maybe this kid needs a chance to start or needs some more playing time. So I think it's really important. You know, like I said, the first three quarters, I try to play everyone even as it is. And the fourth quarter is very fluid. Like I normally have a set, like two players that I know I'm probably going to play, but then the other three could very well be very, you know, like I said, fluid. So I think it's to understand that every game isn't going to be the same, and you just kind of have to attack it that way as a player and as a coach, that you have to be open to that. You can't just be like, these are my five players and I'm going to play them in the last quarter all the time.
Yeah, and I think that still goes back to communication. When you're setting up your team and you're talking to your kids, you're making it clear of here's where you're going to have an opportunity to earn more playing time from game to game or week to week or month to month, whatever the case may be. And it's, to me, it's really critical that the coach values every single player on the team and their contribution and recognizes the contribution that player 12 makes and player 1 makes. If a coach is only focused on player 1, player 2, player 3, and player 10, 11, 12 just constantly get ignored and are, you know, nobody's coaching them during practice and all the focus is on the starters or the top 7, it's very difficult for those last 3, 4, 5 kids who don't get a lot of playing time in the game. And then if they don't get any recognition for what they're bringing during practice and the value, and you're not talking about it, not just to those kids, but I think it's very important if you're the star of the team and I'm the 12th man on the team, it's very important that the coach is talking, when the coach is discussing my role as the 12th player and what I bring to the table, it's important for player number 1 to hear that too, because when player number 1 hears that, they start to internalize the value that a bench player is bringing to the team, whether that be pushing the players ahead of them in practice, whether that just means bringing enthusiasm and energy every single day, being the player that gets the team pumped up and brings energy, whether it's during the game, they're the first person jumping up off the bench when somebody takes a charge or high-fiving people as they come off the floor. I think those are things that the coach has to recognize and reward and show those players at the end of the bench, or those players who aren't getting as many minutes, that you are of value. And conversely, if somebody then comes to you, whether it's a parent or a player, and says, hey, I think my child should be playing more, I think I should be playing more as the player, then the coach can say, look, here's the value that we feel you're bringing right now, and we've been communicating this to you all along. Here's what you would need to do in order to expand your role, whether it be in the next game, whether it be over the next month, whether it would be, you know, you're a 9th grader, here's what you're going to need to do as a 10th grader to be able to play more.
Yeah, and at the end of every season, at least for the boys, we don't necessarily do this for the girls, but I might steal it this year, is we have a little paper that we fill out for the kids, and we rate them on where they are, like 1, 2, 3, or like what they need to work on. And I think it's really important to look at, as a coach, that the kids are going to use this if they use it properly. And, you know,
which is sometimes questionable.
But I need to take it seriously because the kids are going to look at this and they're going to say, you know, how did I do this season? And it basically sums up every facet of the game, and I had to fill it out for all 12 of my kids this year. And you know, I think, you know, I know that two of the kids took a lot of it to heart because I've talked to their parents and I've talked to them like throughout the school day and school year. You know, at the end of the year last year, they were like, "Yeah, I'm going to the gym. On your paper, you said I need to work on such and such, and that's what I've been doing." And so I know at least it reached two of the kids, which is good, and probably those two kids are going to be better for it. So I think it's as a coach, we need to communicate, like you said, you know, going from 9th to 10th grade, these kids are going to be in 8th grade this year. Hopefully we see some dividends come out of the fact that they've been told what they need to work on over the summer and what they need to work on in order to prepare properly for the season to possibly get, you know, my team. I had two or three kids that were fringe A team players, and if they worked hard, they could be on the A team next year. So I think it's really important as a player and as a coach to have that line of communication that we've spent a lot of time talking about in this today.
Yeah, there's two things that I pull out of what you just said, Jason, and that is, one, you have to have a relationship with your players so that when you do give them the type of feedback like you're talking about, they have to trust that you have their best interest at heart. If I haven't built a relationship with a player, and then I give them that evaluation at the end of the season, I'm like, boy, you really need to work on your jump shot, and you know, you really need to work on your dribbling, and you got to be a better rebounder, or whatever the case may be. If I haven't built a relationship and the kids don't trust me, then when they get that evaluation, they're gonna go, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
No, and it's gonna be left at the lunch table or in the recycling bin.
Right, absolutely. And that's not obviously what we want as a coach. And when we're coaching our kids and when we're having these discussions, we want them to take what we're saying and take it to heart and to really try to improve their game based on the things that we're saying. And it goes back to that Brad Stevens quote from earlier. If you want to come in and talk about playing time, whether it be playing time in the course of the season, whether it's talking about what's my role going to be next season, you got to be prepared to hear the truth. And sometimes the truth isn't what we want to hear. It's difficult.
Say the truth hurts
sometimes. Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult to hear the truth. A lot of us, I mean, I can speak for myself as an adult. I don't necessarily like when I get negative feedback on things that I do. It's difficult. You have to train yourself to hear the feedback and think of it not as an attack on you, but rather think of it as a way that you're going to be able to improve. It's information that you can then use to improve your outcomes, whether that be outcomes as a coach or outcomes as a teacher or outcomes as a player, whatever the case may be. So that truth and that communication piece, that relationship piece, I think are very, very important when we talk about how a coach handles a situation when a player comes in to talk about playing time. If you've built the relationship previously, you're going to have a much better chance of having a good outcome when you have that conversation with a player who, you know, isn't playing as much as they would like to. So let's just wrap it up here, Jason, by saying that whether you're a parent, whether you're a player, or whether you're a coach, the way we want to approach this is by looking at what types of positive behaviors can we exhibit as a parent, a player, or a coach that are going to ultimately lead us to the best outcome. And that outcome may not be more playing time. That may not be the outcome that occurs. But if we approach it in the right way, which is we don't whine, we don't complain, we don't badmouth the coach, we don't badmouth the parents. As a coach, we're making sure that we're communicating well. If we don't do the negative things, but we focus on the positive things, we're much more likely to get a positive outcome. We're much more likely to learn the life lesson that when things don't go perfectly for you, when they're not going your way, you can either go down one path where you blame and complain and look at the negative side, or you can go the other way and say, I'm going to work harder. I'm going to bring more enthusiasm. I'm going to figure out a solution to get myself more minutes. And again, it may not result in what you want every single time, but you're much more likely to get the event that you want, the outcome that you want, if you put the time in and really work hard.
Yeah, and like you said, I think communication is ultimately, I think we spent the most time during this podcast today talking about communication. I think having those positive lines of communication is of the utmost importance if you want to get in a better position possibly for your playing time or just in life in general.
We really hope that if you ever get yourself into this situation as a parent or as a coach, as a player, if you find yourself in a situation where you've been benched, your child's been benched, you've had to bench a player, or a player's not getting as much playing time as maybe they think they should, we hope that some of the things that we've talked about today will help you when you find yourself in a situation like this, and that you'll use the game of basketball again to teach life lessons or to learn life lessons that will improve the quality, not just of your basketball season, but of your life as you move forward. So thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. All right, that was pretty good. Yeah. That was solid.
How long did we talk? 40 minutes?
The Head Start Basketball Little Dribblers program is for boys and girls in grades kindergarten through third grade and will be held at the Stronzo Recreation Center. The Head Start Basketball Little Dribblers program is designed to provide a positive and fun environment for kids to develop their basketball dribbling skills with individual attention given to each player. The Little Dribblers program will actively, creatively, and playfully engage players in ball handling skills and drills. The ultimate goal is to get your little dribbler comfortable and confident with the basketball in their hands, able to utilize both their right and left hand equally and effectively. The Little Dribblers will feature quality instructors, emphasis on activity, drills to work on at home, individual attention, and skill development. They will be held at Stronzo Recreation Center on Saturday, September 8th, September 15th, and September 22nd from 12 to 1 o'clock p.m. For more information, visit headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.